Welcome to the Northern Business Podcast, a regular discussion with people in the north of England who lead businesses, employ people, and have new ideas to help our economy grow. The Northern Business Podcast is produced by Recognition PR. We serve scores of companies in different sectors across the country, and some are occasionally on this podcast. And we're kindly sponsored by Virtue Motors, one of the top automotive retailers in the UK. Now, I'm Graham Robb. In the studio, we have Aman Chahal. Now, Aman is the chief executive at Tapered Plus. Very interesting business. Hear all about that in a minute. Down the line, we have Phil Wedgwood, engagement technology specialist at a company called Engage, CEO of Engage, and Claire Walsh. Now, Claire is a fantastic expert, and she's the director of education at the Institute of Analytics. And she couldn't be a better person to be our first guest on the programme today, because we want to talk about apps, we want to talk about AI, and we want to talk about growth, because today we're broadcasting live and recording on the day that Rachel Reeves gave her speech about the next phase in the government's policy to engender growth in the country. Well, we won't go into the politics, Claire, but there's nothing that is hiding about AI and data and its importance to growing all economies. We've seen in this last 2 weeks, President Trump push a massive investment program in front of the American people with his Stargate proposal. We've seen a new disruptive AI platform launched, which is Chinese-backed, called DeepSeek. And we've also seen Keir Starmer talk about the importance of AI. Put it into context. You're a global institute. Put it into context for me.
So I think for the last 10 years, all nations have been very aware of their position in the global race for AI readiness and data advancement. Obviously, the big leaders in this would be China and America. And then there's a pack of countries that come behind. For a long time, UK was heading up that pack. We were often third. We have slipped slightly, and I think it's really good that we are considering seriously our investment. The hope is that if we can get AI right, we will be able to come out of the plateau of productivity that we've been in as a nation for quite some time now, particularly here in the UK, and it's going to give us an edge in global competitive markets going forwards.
Okay, now you do have the ability to give a wide-ranging view, because your institute is a global non-profit institute that looks at these trends. How do you get all your data? Where do you get it all from?
So we collect our data from various sources. Like anyone, we have challenges because we talk about data all the time. Data is the new oil and all this. But in actual fact, only a handful of large data brokers have all the data. And for the rest of us who abide by ethical standards and we don't scrape websites for data that is not ours, we have to pay for it. So we rely on insights on the ground from our members. We track development in all of the countries where they're represented, and we're present in every continent around the globe. And really, for us, it's about not the big dreams and the big investment plans, but what's happening on the ground and how businesses themselves are integrating and embracing digital change, which is challenging for many people.
Well, you know, you just said something in that answer that I was going to drill down on, and we'll probably look at it in the course of our discussion. And that is about scraping and the ability of keeping data original. And two things that had emerged in the public debate in the last couple of weeks. One was this Chinese-backed and originated new AI platform, DeepSeek, which people had been publishing. The Spectator, for instance, published that when questions were asked of it, when it came to Chinese policy, it vetted itself. And then you've got people like Sir Paul McCartney making a very impassioned plea on the BBC at the weekend that AI can scrape compositions and make compositions appear in different formats when the original artists weren't credited. He explained that an AI-based bit of software had created music that seemingly had him playing a Chuck Berry song when he never did. So there are genuine ethical considerations, aren't there?
Absolutely. Legislation is lagging behind the technology very much, especially in terms of how people utilize somebody's image or their representation falsely. And it happens to celebrities. It happens to everyday people who can be placed in incredibly compromising situations on the back of a photo. There are so many ethical issues behind this. When we think about OpenAI, they openly admit that they took the data illegally because they had no alternative but to take the data illegally, which raises questions, we're not going to do anything about it.
Yeah, but the data was used to teach their computers rather than to replicate, but eventually it seeps back, doesn't it?
Eventually it seeps back. They didn't have the right to take that data and make a copy of it because this is copyright law. Mm-hmm. And it was assumed that we would bend the law on that. And to be honest, it seems like we have. We haven't really come down with a definite decision on that. In terms of what the new Chinese alternative means, in some ways it's kind of hopeful, because one of the challenges we have with these foundational AI models is that they are filthy dirty. They are consuming huge amounts of water, electricity. They're keeping coal-fired stations alive, and they're polluting the environment, the air we breathe. And it does seem that this new Chinese AI is going to be much faster to train and therefore significantly reduces the environmental impact. And that's a great thing. But then there's also this other question mark. Well, did they do it by stealing data from Microsoft and OpenAI? How did they do it? How did they copy it? Just how much of it is
copied? There's a lawsuit being launched now, I saw, in the last 24 hours. I had a debate with a member of my team, one of our technicians here, who's well into this. He's one of our resident geeks. We love him very much. And he was saying that actually one of the things about the new DeepSeek platform is that it was based on open source technology. So if you could manage to use it outside of the Chinese hosting area, you could get a more open and less compromised AI function. Did that strike you as a rational explanation?
I think it's a little bit too early to assume that. We haven't really had an opportunity to play around with it, test it out, see whether it's just reproducing the exact content that came in. You know, there are lots of tests that we would run to check the ethics of an AI and how it was built. And we haven't really had the opportunity to do that yet. If it works, it is actually a positive thing.
Right. Okay, let's bring other people in. And we've got Aman here. We've also got Phil down the line. I'm going to ask you both to just explain to the audience what your business is first, and then we'll drill into some of the points that Claire's made. Phil, first of all, the Engage app maker, what do you do?
Well, we built an amazing mobile-first engagement platform that allows businesses to engage with the audiences that matter most around their business. So predominantly their colleagues internally and their customers externally. And I've always been a mad technologist. I've always been fascinated about how technology can impact business. So we've invested in all of the leading technology consumer-grade areas, such as augmented reality, now artificial intelligence, and lots of other areas around technology that are really having a huge opportunity to allow businesses to catch up. When we look at how we engage in our personal lives and how we engage in our business lives, there's a huge gap there. And I think that all of these conversations are brilliant because AI is something that's very much attracting everyday media attention. And for me as a business technologist, as a digital entrepreneur, it's allowing me to have a much more open conversation about all the other stuff that surrounds that and the implications of that in business.
Okay, well, we'll come back and tackle some of those points in a moment. Let's hear from Aman. Now, you've been on our podcast before, Aman, and your business is in the construction sphere, but you really are adopting technology. Tell us what the business does and how the adoption works.
Yeah, so we are Tapered Plus. We design and supply flat roof tapered insulation schemes across the UK and Europe. And our journey with AI, we started with a system called TIPID, which is Tapered Plus Insulation Design System. And we're working with the University of Teesside, and we're working on a knowledge transfer partnership. And we're looking at deep learning, large language models, and NLP, which stands for natural language processing, to automate and use the semantics to create structured data out of unstructured data to help providers with business intelligence to help drive a business forward.
Now, before we started our podcast today, you explained how that actually worked. And if I own the building we're in now and it has a flat roof. Now, if I came to you and I wanted the roof insulated with your flat roof insulation product, what would I be able to do that used AI?
Essentially, Graham, we as a company, we receive lots and lots of data from our clients, receive lots of drawings, we receive lots of specifications, and to shift through all of that takes us a hell of a lot of time. So what used to take us 50 minutes will now take 5 through the natural language processing part of the AI system, which essentially will read all that documentation, pick out the parts that we need, and put it in a structured format ready for our design team to start the design.
So I might be sending you an email, I might be sending you a photograph, a design. And if I'm a builder, the photograph and the design won't just be about the roof. It'll be about other things, I presume, the plumbing and so on.
Totally. And we receive sometimes documents which are 90 pages deep. Yet we need several pieces of that information within that 90-page document to design. And we can receive PDFs, Word documents, and it can be across all different formats. So to structure that data in a structured format is a godsend.
Now, Claire, what you've just heard from a man there, that goes to this productivity piece. It's clearly tangible for a man, isn't it?
Absolutely fantastic, yeah. And I think this is where we're very excited at the moment. It's this opportunity to tidy up our desktops, tidy up all of this documentation that we are drowning in at the moment and bring real insight out of it. And yet it's really exciting to hear how Aman is working with it. And with some complicated data structures, well done to you. I think it's a fantastic project.
Now, if you just look at the kind of thing that we were talking about, DeepSeek, but in America, there's this Stargate project, which is vast investment. It's £500 billion. I mean, you know, that's half of the entire UK government budget, £500 billion. And it's OpenAI, SoftBank and Oracle. And it was explained that this is because they're building huge data centres. The data centres are linked to clean power stations, and that the application of the technology is more complex than even Aman. It's about, you know, things like, I saw the press conference and there was explained that in due course, you could go to the doctor and if you had cancer, had a specific drug tailored to you. That's the objective of this project. Is that leading the way, or do you feel other countries are catching up with that?
So it's really important to have access to high-powered data centers. That's unquestionable. And any country that has limited access is going to be held back, especially for their researchers. And in the UK, our researchers are largely based at universities. The reality is we don't have that many companies, private companies researching. So we need to make sure that we have access to these machines available to people who perhaps don't have the budget of a private company. But I think a lot of the innovations will come as they always do, with people experimenting in the real world with a happy coincidence of circumstances that come together and create solutions. These are what we call socio-technical machines. They exist in society with a technical element, and honestly, to understand them and how they evolve, you have to have an understanding of how people adopt them, how people use them, as well as what we engineer into them that limits what people can or can't do.
There are some restrictions in the future, aren't there? And they're probably about the availability of the hardware. I was reading on your website, Claire, a really interesting paper, and it was about, and now I'm going to show my ignorance because I'm just learnt it. Obviously, central control units of computer, CPU, central processing unit, and a graphic control chip are very different. And the graphic control chip is there for things like facial recognition and so on. Absolutely fundamental to the modern use of this technology. Yet, finding these companies that make these chips is becoming increasingly difficult.
Absolutely. We have the situation in Taiwan where the NVIDIA chips in particular are made, and there is a lot of competition for influence in that area. And I think what we have to bear in mind is that with these wonderful tools, like I think we've all had a play with ChatGPT or some of these other chatbot tools, each time we run a query, it has to run over all the trillions of data points that are in there. And that's what makes it highly iterative and highly dirty and highly demanding in terms of compute power. It's not like running a search algorithm. And I think it's understanding how we balance the technical complexity of what we're using, the fact that we literally cannot control them under what we call the transformers architecture that we're using at the moment. We may be getting some solutions coming soon, but right now, today, nobody can really control what these machines say. They can control what goes in it, so they can never mention the word Tiananmen in the training data, but they can't control what comes out of it. And so it's balancing all of these needs. But yes, absolutely, hardware is what powers it all, and we do need to think ahead.
And we can't have the hardware just in a vulnerable state like Taiwan. Obviously, Taiwan and China have a long history of aggression and mutual distrust. But what's happened to the West on its production of these chips? Is it over as far as that industry is concerned? Because I saw America was trying to stoke it up again.
To be honest, the skills and the expertise in the factories are all in Taiwan, and they have become so specialized that it's really hard for anyone internationally to compete with that particular state. But, you know, all countries are looking at the risk of keeping a very dependent link in the chain in that particular country. Where it will go, will we develop new chips? I'm not too sure. I mean, I know every hardware company around the world, China and the US, is researching the next generation of more efficient, more powerful chips, because that is where the money is.
Claire, you've just laid a lot of ground for our other guests to comment on. So let's look at Phil. Now, you've got these apps that are going out there. What are you thinking about the future of the apps? People are used to having apps on their phone now. What is the future way in which they're going to work? Talking to each other and actual facial recognition, all that stuff? What kind of things are you looking at?
Yeah, I think, look, it's just trying to take all the best bits that we use in our personal lives, a hell of a lot more than we do our business lives, and just supercharge those. And we've talked a lot about AI. I think AI is going to accelerate that hugely. And I think, you know, for me, we've talked a lot about maybe some of the downsides of AI and the implications of those. You know, look at key investment themes that are out there for 25, AI and quantum are top of the list. We've talked about that. Then you've got sort of infrastructure and the hardware. We've talked about that. And then the energy to power it. They're kind of three things. But ultimately, what I see in my business life, I spend a lot of my time in the boardroom of businesses across pretty much every sector. And I'm always very underwhelmed in the main by how people are embracing AI technologies. And I go further and say paid for AI technologies, because that's the thing that helps safeguard at the average enterprise, because most of the time, if you're paying for the AI services, they are then more gated, they are more GDPR compliant, ISO 27001 compliant. And obviously, as an organization that we're compliant on all of those areas, we're very attuned to the impact of that. We're seeing a lot of businesses nervous around playing with these tool sets because their IT team saying, look, it's not safe, we don't want to give away our data, and so on. And rightly so. And I think we're going to see a trend where we're going to need to see a lot more innovation as to these open, large sort of consumer-grade AI models, and then spitting out segregated enterprise versions that safeguard data sets. And that gives us a lot more power to engage, a lot more industry-specific insight to be more compelling and useful when we engage. So the data set, the relevancy is there. And, you know, I think that we're very close to, in most scenarios, most sort of office type scenarios, I think you're going to see in 25 that most of the time, 80% of a person's job could be done by these AI services to some degree. So, and when you say that out loud, that's quite impactful, because I don't think most businesses have really thought about that, really. And even when you look at the physical world, because I use the term phygital, which is quite nice, because that's the new world, I believe, when you're engaging as a business, you've got to embrace both the physical and the digital world together and look at it much more cohesively. And so, again, using AI will facilitate that and enhance the relevancy and speed at which those things are adopted. But obviously, we've seen with Elon launching his Optimus robots, I think that's due to land in next year. So you're going to see, you know, people like maybe that work in a retail environment or in a coffee shop being replaced, or a bar, you know, front of house in hospitality, maybe being replaced by robots that will be AI powered. And that's something now that, you know, we saw movies about 10, 20 years ago, but it's actually going to be landing in our world in a year's time. So I think when you look at it from that perspective, it's there's a huge amount of opportunity and a huge amount of cultural change, both physically and mentally, for the business world and the consumers to get their heads around.
It's absolutely right. I mean, the coffee machines are a good example. I mean, you can't go to a local garage without having a machine now dispense you coffee. And we're not talking about dumb machines either, the blends they can do. And you can see Sainsbury's closing all their coffee shops as well this last week. What do you make of what our two other contributions have made? Because you're applying it actually in a business, they are supplying thought and business support.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the efficiencies that we expect to see will be around about 30%, which will allow us to take on a lot more work over the next 2 years, which will be brilliant for the business. But a couple of offshoots, we will start to see a reduction in human error as well, which is an issue in a lot of businesses. Plus, the business intelligence, which comes out of the data, will allow us to have market insights about our customer, as well as budgeting and forecasting data. So there's a lot of positives to be had. And if we can have robots to install the roof as well, even better.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to just one more thing, Phil, and I'm going to close because we've had a lot from you. And Claire, be prepared to close us off. But Phil, I was watching one of your customers give a testimonial, and they were saying, because your apps obviously are on mobile phone based, the intranet is now nowhere in their office. This was a big company that was saying this. They don't have an intranet anymore. How is it going to change? In other ways, what will our office look like if you're using all these apps and robots?
Well, I think when you look at that word intranet, I mean, for me, that takes me back to the 90s when I started my career. But and indeed, telephony, email, intranets, these are all technologies that haven't changed at all, really, since the 90s. So, but most businesses still anchored to those technologies. And so how will it change? Yeah, I mean, these things are changing now very quickly. I think you have to be mobile first with as much as possible, because that we're already a mobile first society. Over 80% of the internet traffic in the UK now goes through the phone.
Yeah.
And certainly a lot of the AI services you're consuming as apps on your phone rather than on the desktop. So yeah, it's huge amount of change, and that's what's so exciting about being in the technology space. And I think we're going to see next week Grok 3 launch with, I think it's a record-breaking 100,000 H100 GPUs, which is just insane. And that you know, this is happening by, we had, like you say earlier, we had DeepSeek earlier in the week, and before that something else, and it's literally changing by the week and by the month. So it's a fascinating time.
It is. And Claire, you look at people who make policy, and you've had the government today talking about growth, but it's all been about infrastructure today. It's all been about trains. It's all been about property and so on. Some of this stuff is absolutely the big infrastructure spending of our century, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it's really important that we all participate in these discussions. And what kind of society we want as well. I think people get a bit afraid because they feel like there's a privileged group that are deciding how AI is going to be designed and how it's going to be used, when in reality, I think if we can all engage a little bit more, we can find solutions that work for us, take on the boring, routine, repetitive sides of our jobs, the ones that we really don't want to do, or even we ignore quite often because they're just too time-consuming and don't provide enough justification to carry them out. I think we're going to see people embracing technologies that can support us with those tasks. And it does, I think, as you've said, as all the speakers have said, helps us to move forward in our business and our plans, and helps us to guarantee that in the next 10 years, we're still viable when machines do have a far greater presence in our working life.
Well, Claire, Phil, Aman, thank you for joining us. Now, if you want to be a guest on the Northern Business Podcast, do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. Check us out on LinkedIn. That's an easy way to get in touch with our podcast producer, Alex Dryden. And thanks also to our technical operator, Robin Campbell. Join us next time for the Northern Business Podcast. Don't miss an episode. Like, rate and subscribe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.